don't need no education. Welcome to Education Nation, where every Saturday morning at 10:30, we grab our second cup of coffee and tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom. School is now in session.
Well, good morning, and thank you for joining us here on Education Nation. I am your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, and it's always such a pleasure to be with our listeners every Saturday morning. And also, I'm joined in studio once again by education producer and co-host Mark Durkin.
Well, good morning again, Rebecca. Can you believe how fast the weeks are going?
No,
we're in May already.
I cannot believe it. And this weekend, we wrap up our month-long series on learning disabilities and how to recognize their symptoms and how to treat them and to help school children thrive in the classroom.
Now, as we've consistently reiterated, learning disabilities are not a problem with intelligence or motivation, and kids with learning disabilities are not lazy or dumb. Most are just as smart as everyone else, and a simple definition of a learning disability is when a child or an adult sees, hears, and understands things differently. Their brains are simply wired differently. The differences affect how they receive and process information, but there is hope. And it has been our aim here at Education Nation to inform parents how to spot these disabilities and what medical and non-medical treatment strategies are available to help their school children succeed.
Mm-hmm. And joining us this morning, once again, we welcome Shirley Marsh to
Thank
Education
you.
Nation.
Thank you.
Morning. Yes, welcome back for your fourth or even fifth show. I think we did one before we started this series.
This is number five.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
So, yes, mm-hmm. you've done a fabulous job. but Shirley's contribution really have given us some crucial information and helpful solutions in how to diagnose and thrive with dyslexia and ADHD. And Shirley is a learning specialist for students with dyslexia and helps students with their reading at Liberty Classical Academy. Shirley also has a master's degree in special education and is trained in the Orton-Gillingham approach. She joins us again to discuss another common learning disability, auditory processing disorder. So once again, as I mentioned, welcome back to Education Nation.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Good. And according to the National Institutes of Health, in children with learning difficulties, some form of auditory processing disorder has been found to be in 43% of all learning difficulty scenarios. Mm-hmm. Around 50% of children with dyslexia also have coexisting auditory processing disorder. Mm-hmm. So we can see a definite overlap of APD with dyslexia and perhaps other learning disabilities. Mm-hmm. So please explain to our audience what the auditory processing disorder actually is.
All right. You make a very good point in that overlapping portion. So I'm really glad we're going to discuss what auditory processing disorder is. Mm-hmm. It's going to be, I think, really a good thing to talk about because I don't think it's as widely understood mm-hmm. or recognized. Mm-hmm. A simple definition is how it adversely affects how sound that travels unimpeded through the ear is processed and interpreted by the brain. Mm-hmm. It's also known as the central auditory processing disorder, so it might also be called CAPD. Mm-hmm. But individuals who struggle with this do not recognize the subtle differences between sounds and words, even when they're loud and clear enough mm-hmm. to be heard. And they can also find it difficult to tell where sounds are coming from and to make sense of the order of sounds or to block out competing background noises.
Mm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So just to be clear, this has nothing to do with any type of a hearing
Correct.
Deficit.
Correct.
So the only way you could really correctly diagnose an auditory processing disorder would be to go ahead and have a child's ears checked mm-hmm. to make sure that there isn't some type of a hearing mm-hmm. loss, even if it's a mild hearing loss mm-hmm. that can affect a child's ability to hear. So this is a child that does not have any type of hearing loss, any type of diagnosed hearing loss, but yet they're still having trouble with these things that you mentioned earlier. So please define then, I guess I just did kind of, for our audience, what ADP isn't. So it isn't a hearing loss.
Correct. Correct. And to just address that, Rebecca, yeah. Part of the problem with APD is that hearing is so good.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So what it isn't, there are many disorders that can affect a person's ability to understand auditory information. But the individuals that have ADHD might appear to be similar to a child with auditory processing disorder. But it's not a difficulty with attending for a child with auditory processing disorder, mm-hmm. like we talked about with ADHD, where it's inattentive and whatnot. It's truly in the central nervous system where processing that auditory information is lost.
Mm-hmm.
And and that's the biggest difference with those two.
Mm-hmm. And that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so other things that it isn't, like mm-hmm. we said, it isn't dyslexia, although they can coexist. And that's what makes it so complicated for practitioners and why it's so beneficial for when an audiologist is diagnosing this, that they're working with a team of people that know the child in different settings as well. So the mm-hmm. classroom teacher will be involved, the parents will be involved and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how wonderful it is to mm-hmm. have those professionals in place when you go for the testing so that they know what to look for specifically to help distinguish between the different disorders and the overlapping.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, when it comes to APD, research also indicates that there are different symptoms at different age levels for school children.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we go through the different school levels of children and what those symptoms might look like. We'll mm-hmm. start off first at the preschool level.
Sure. Smaller children might complain of listening difficulties. When they're first learning our letters and our sounds and they're learning to speak, they show a difficulty with understanding speech in a noisy environment. So if a classroom is chaotic or if they're at an amusement park or at the zoo or trying to follow their parents around wherever they are, it can be difficult to filter out the noise around them. They have difficulty following directions. We've talked about this with many other disabilities, but for children with trying to process things auditorily, it's difficult to simply follow them because they are not getting them.
Right.
And then we talked about this earlier, too, where kids who struggle to differentiate between speech sounds, say the sound of an F and the sound of a TH, they're very similar. So where I see that with children with dyslexia, I think it may be a lot of that overlap of a child who may or may not have auditory processing, where they're also having a difficulty with that. But once again, they're in both cases. Mm-hmm. So a child who has both, it's a double whammy.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, we talked about it's not a hearing issue, but they will appear as though they're not hearing you because they will say, what? What?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
mm-hmm.
miss it. Ask for repetitions, clarifications. And as kids are talking, they mix up words like salary and celery
mm-hmm.
or built.
Mm.
I even have seen it with the word milk. Kids hear it as milk, and in Minnesota we do say milk.
Yeah.
But for some of these children I've worked with, where I want to teach them the word milk is spelled with an I, but they have heard it and they hear it as milk, and they don't believe me. They honestly don't, and it's endearing to me, but it's a true struggle for them. So
the mispronunciation of different words, though, that might be at an older age level than just preschool,
because directly,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Because
exactly.
they're still learning
mm-hmm.
to form those words.
Mm-hmm.
How about at the grade school level? Any other different symptoms that you recognize?
As they're in school and they're in the classroom setting, they have difficulty understanding directions from their teachers. And in the lower school ages of children, you know, teachers are very direct and they're very systematic in giving directions, and they never leave the classroom to chaos. A good teacher is organized. So for the most part, children follow their directions. But children with this difficulty, you'll see that they're still struggling to understand what you're saying. So if you've asked the children, today we're going to be doing our math problems, and you've written them on the board, and you said something like, we're only doing evens today, let's mm-hmm. say, that child might miss that whole thing and do the whole assignment
mm-hmm.
And not even realize that they missed it. So we can talk about that too, just about things teachers can be doing, but
okay.
that would be a sign that they missed it.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And how does that snowball, say, like when you mm-hmm. then get to the mm-hmm. middle school level?
Good. As language becomes more developed, and in English class you're talking about metaphors and similes and idioms, as peers are telling jokes and they use sarcasm, kids who struggle with the auditory processing disorder often are confused mm-hmm. by those things, and they will take things very literally often
mm-hmm.
Because you know, that's what you said. So that's what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but once again, when it comes to, let's say, the middle school, if you're in a classroom setting that's loud and chaotic, kids are rambunctious, it's going to be very frustrating for a child with auditory processing disorder.
Okay.
Yep. So I think that's probably true. Mm-hmm. And everything I've said previously is part of the process too.
Sure. Yeah. And within the K through 12 structure, mm-hmm. how about at the high school level?
Right. Similar to above, but kids become much more independent in the high school level. And teachers tend to use lecture as a style. And that can be very difficult for a child to rely solely on words being spoken if there isn't a visual presence to right. what they're trying to say. So teachers that today use PowerPoints and have their outlines, you know, put visually, that's really, really important, because otherwise it might look like the child is ignoring you or not at all involved in what's going on, and their focus is elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, in order to confirm APD, mm-hmm. does one need an official medical diagnosis? And if so, how would such a diagnosis be made and by whom?
Yeah, we briefly talked about this, so let's just clarify mm-hmm. it. An audiologist is the doctor that will do a series of tests in a sound room where they are working with how kids and adults are processing sounds. It's complicated, but that's where it takes place. And then, like I mentioned too, the multidisciplinary team of psychologists or the teachers, speech and language pathologists, if they're trying to rule out other things, it's really good to have a comprehensive evaluation mm-hmm. take
right.
place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. Well, we just mentioned in all of those different levels of school mm-hmm. The different difficulties mm-hmm. that might be present, you know, mm-hmm. such as attending to speech, mm-hmm. understanding speech, mm-hmm. remembering what's been heard, mm-hmm. tolerating noise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are things obviously parents want to look for to make the
right.
determination whether testing for auditory processing would be beneficial. Mm-hmm. Are there any others that you can think of that can kind of finish off that thought?
To just finish off that thought, that it's also important that a child be probably 7 or 8 years of age. I think that's about the age that development has gotten to a place where it's the right time to make
sure.
the diagnosis. That's important. And then once a diagnosis has been made, the nature of the disorder can be determined. It's complex. It's not always a cookie cutter. This is what it is.
Sure.
Each child is uniquely designed and has different strengths and weaknesses. So if you have an intuition about your child that this seems to be something that's going on, their frustration in the classroom will be very evident to you.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You'll just see they're missing it. And parents who spend a lot of time conversing with their children are very wise, and they can pick up on this mm-hmm. early on. And if you suspect it, start with the pediatrician and just, you know, share what you're sensing.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So I know that you mentioned earlier that a child with auditory processing disorder sometimes has trouble hearing the differences in sounds, and I would think that that would really affect their ability to learn how to read,
mm-hmm.
and that's where you get the crossover then
right.
with the dyslexia
right.
and
mm-hmm.
auditory processing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering then, is it still possible to have an underlying processing disorder, auditory or some other disorder, even if a child passes a hearing test? We kind of talked about this a little bit earlier.
You did, and I'll say it again that hearing and having strong hearing is part of the problem with the auditory processing. It's as though they're hearing way too much. So
mm-hmm.
it's coming mm-hmm. in, but it's what's happening.
Too much stimuli.
Neurologically, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's a processing issue, not a hearing mm-hmm. issue. Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah, very interesting. So as I listen to this, I'm reminded of when I watch movies with my kids and they say, "Mom, stop asking us questions." So maybe I have an auditory processing disorder.
Or you are an auditory learner and like to process things out loud.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I'm chuckling when I hear some of these. I'm thinking, that sounds like me sometimes. So, all right. Well, it's time for a short break on Education Nation. When we return, we'll discuss why specific and current treatment options are necessary when dealing with processing disorders. Shirley Marsh will also introduce teaching strategies that help students overcome auditory processing disorder. So stay tuned.
We don't need no education.
And welcome back to Education Nation with your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, and learning specialist, Shirley Marsh. I'm your co-host, Mark Durkin. Today, we are finishing our month-long series on learning disabilities, specifically focusing today on auditory processing disorder.
APD is just one of the many processing disorders. In fact, children with APD often go undiagnosed or often are misdiagnosed with a label of inattentive. It's also possible to have multiple processing disorders simultaneously, with overlapping symptoms a very real challenge in trying to discern the correct processing disorder. So how important is it, Shirley, to have the right type of intervention in place?
Mm-hmm. We just alluded to this a little bit before the break in that each child is uniquely designed and has different strengths and different weaknesses. And I am not an expert on the therapies that are used, interventions used in the medical realm for mm-hmm. auditory processing disorder. But I do have a little bit of information that I've seen over the years where there are different ways to help children develop strategies that they need and to actually work on recruiting some higher order skills mm-hmm. to how they and to help them compensate for their inability to process the language mm-hmm. auditorily. And part of it is changing the learning or the communication environment for a child. Mm-hmm. So thinking about what type of school they're in. And then also if it requires some sort of remediation with an auditory, there are doctors that are designing programs, and I've seen computer programs that are used between home and school, and they're quite intensive. And in years past, I've had children that in school worked with a therapist and spent, I don't remember how many hours, I feel like it was like 6 hours a day where they were doing intensive, not hearing, but auditory, the headphones on, mm-hmm. and they were working through different sounds that they would listen to and identifying them and being able to listen to one thing going in one ear and another thing going
in
another ear.
That's called dichotic listening. That was
Thank
what my
you.
Master's
there
degree
you go.
Thesis
you should
was
be
on.
Talking. But those, you know, I've seen those things take place, mm-hmm. but it's so important to know this is this child and this is what this child needs, mm-hmm. and to not assume a child will outgrow it, but to work with it right where they're at and to help them develop those skills.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Very important. How have you personally, Shirley, seen mm-hmm. APD play out in the classroom that you've taught in?
Right. Just like I just saw or experienced when I was in a special education classroom with a child that was doing that therapy both in school and at home and with their therapist. The other side of that would be how I've seen children who aren't receiving the help or have maybe not been diagnosed yet and what that looks like for these kids in the classroom. And I said it before, but it's very common for these children to just always appear as though they're just one step behind. Mm-hmm. They didn't quite get it and they're asking for help. And then, unfortunately, some kids don't even recognize that they missed something, so they don't even know to ask for a redirection. Mm-hmm. It's sad. It's mm-hmm. frustrating. But as you recognize those children and as those children are starting to get help, I found them to be able to be very successful in the classroom with the right things in place.
Mm-hmm. 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 And teachers maybe just paying a little bit more attention to that
exactly.
child, knowing they need to check in with that child
exactly.
more frequently rather than mm-hmm. just assuming mm-hmm. that they all get it,
yep.
knowing
yep.
which ones need
right.
that extra.
And so once these children are identified, it's so important to have communication with the parents
mm-hmm.
and to not penalize the child for missing an assignment, but to just be upfront with the parent. And maybe it's a daily basis where it's, okay, this is what's due tomorrow. I just want you to know at home. And that just takes that pressure off the child for missing those details that they are not able to necessarily attend to.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said before, it's a process for children to develop those skills of independence. But in those early years, we want them to be learning. We want them to have success in the mm-hmm. classroom. And another thing I've noticed is that it's just so important for these kids to not be rushed. So when you've asked the class a question and you see hands go up and you don't see that hand go up, but you're really hoping they know the answer, not to call on them because mm-hmm. that puts them in a place of failure right away. Mm-hmm. And then they look stupid and they're mm-hmm. dealing with the pressure of the peers looking mm-hmm. down on them. But I found a really positive way to maybe address that is to say to a child earlier on the day or the day before, tomorrow we're going to be talking about such and such. And if you want to participate, I want you to know what's going to be happening. So maybe you could be thinking about that. And then right beforehand to just give them that other prep, hey, we're going to be talking about the Civil War today. And remember yesterday we talked about Abraham Lincoln. What do you remember about him? I'm going to ask a question about that. And to just prepare them for success that they would be able to know, I know this is coming and I'm going to raise my mm-hmm. hand. And just that will go so far for those kids.
Right.
Wow. Yeah.
So in addition to, you know, working with parents and keeping them afloat of what's going on and then mm-hmm. also mm-hmm. working ahead with
right.
some of these students by preparing them from what's to come, what are some other specific strategies
mm-hmm.
that you've
right.
used in the classroom and what improvements have you witnessed?
Mm-hmm. When a child, or when you're a teacher in a classroom and you're explaining directions, to show a child what you expect, to have a model Let's say that the previous year you put together some sort of bulletin board, say on the state of Minnesota, and they have a new state. But if you just show them that visual of this is what your project is going to look like at the end of this project, they can have a visual and they can see it right away. But if you're just simply describing, it's going to be a, you know, a cardboard and there's going to be a picture here and a picture there and a label or a map here and a, it's gone and it's not setting them up for success. So that's really important to show rather than just explain.
Right.
And if you've told a child something with specific words and they didn't understand it, to simply repeat those same words probably will be frustrating and not be understood. So to find a way to rephrase and then to seek for understanding of them by letting them to then rephrase for you what they've understood, so you know, okay, you did understand it, not just assume. That's really important. Giving visual cues, being able to have signals for kids, have things on paper rather than just spoken, like I said before. So if you have given a lecture, take your notes, make a copy of them, and give them to the child so that they have them even to follow along while you are lecturing. That would be more at an older school level.
Well, and even just making sure that you have handouts. I know that's one of our requirements at Liberty is that when any type of a large assignment of any sort is given at the middle and upper school level, there needs to be a handout that has clearly written expectations and instructions with a rubric to make sure
for students, everybody.
It just puts everybody on the same page, and then that takes the pressure off the students who do have an auditory processing disorder.
Definitely, definitely. This is interesting, but when you are working with kids, to be careful of the language that you use. If you're speaking in metaphors a lot or using even sarcasm in the classroom, which can be done in a fun way, but those kids will struggle with that. And you can see that even within their social situation. So as a teacher, to be recognizing those things and just try to stay on top of them and be as clear as you can.
So now I really think I have an auditory processing disorder because my kids also make fun of me for not getting jokes.
I love you, Rebecca. I love you. You know, this is an easy thing to do too, but for teachers to be able to change their tone and their pitch of their voice to just keep it fresh, you know, serious, but just changing that and speaking slowly, but not in monotony, you know what I mean? And then when you've got a key word or a key point, that you distress those words.
Okay. You know, we talked earlier about visiting an audiologist for testing for APD. You know, what can parents do to help their children thrive in the classroom and at home?
Don't hesitate. When you suspect it, go to the doctor right away. Get the appointment. It's better to know than to not know. And once you have that information, I understand that parents sometimes struggle with shame, or they might struggle with a feeling of failure that I somehow failed my child. But to understand the root of this, it has nothing to do with what you've done as a parent. There's you can only move forward. And so the best thing you can do is to be upfront with teachers and the school to just advocate for your child right off the bat so that they will have success. Waiting for that to show up in the classroom is so frustrating for the child. Yes, it's frustrating for the teacher, but it's more frustrating for the child. And they will live in a world of what's wrong with me. And I really believe in empowering children and understanding that whatever your diagnosis is, that you've been designed for a reason and you have strengths and we all have weaknesses, and figuring out how to take those strengths and to have success all the while trying to strengthen your weaknesses. Or figuring out the strategies that work for coping and getting through, but just believing and having that belief in yourself is so important. So right away for parents to just come along their kids and say, this is a road we're on and we're going to do it. I just encourage that.
Good. So Shirley, what resources would you direct parents to if they suspect APD? You mentioned going to the doctor, but what else can you recommend for people to do?
A couple things. There are, like I spoke about with the ADHD earlier on in another segment, that there are support groups available. In some of my research, I came across a blog, and I'm not a blogger, but this one really struck me. And the blog is understood.org. And the article that I found was 7 Things I Wish People Knew About Parenting a Child with Auditory Processing Disorder. And it was written by Rachel Gurevich just this last fall. And it was really powerful. And it was just some of her struggles. And she herself, I believe, also has auditory processing disorder, which is another thing that, like many disorders, it is a genetic, can mm-hmm. be genetic. But I really enjoyed reading that. And it just is a nice blog that maybe that would be something that people would want to follow if they do have a child with auditory processing mm-hmm. disorder.
Can you say the name of that one more time?
I can. It's www.understood.org. Okay. And it's a community. It's a blog.
Good.
That I found. And, you know, this is just coming to my mind right now. But I think of the word or the phrase wait time. Mm-hmm. And thinking about wait time when it comes to children who are struggling with any learning disability, I see it across the board, that if you ask a child a question, to just pause and allow them 5 to 6 seconds to process what you've asked and to state. And in the world of trying to do things so quickly, just think of what's lost and the opportunities that are lost for children that know they know it, but it just took a little longer to process mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And just how valuable that is in the classroom setting too, for calling on kids. And you know the children in your classroom that are going to raise their hands first, but just, like I said, preparing children ahead of time
yeah.
to just give them that chance for success is so good. Crucial.
Good. So I'm going to ask you another question that ties into really all the shows. We've mm-hmm. been listening to you talk about dyslexia, ADHD, mm-hmm. and auditory processing disorders today. And in each case, it seemed that you had a lot of recommendations for teachers and parents mm-hmm. that included, you know, giving kids a lot of direction, making sure you use visuals and not just auditory, and giving kids time. And so many of these things fall into what we would consider classical education, you know, teaching students from many different modalities and using their different senses. So I'm wondering, do you think that back when we were using classical education as a more of a standard form across the board in our nation, that we had fewer learning disabilities diagnosed because we were actually teaching kids in a way that made sense with how they were wired?
Mm-hmm. I wasn't around back then. Mm-hmm. I know you weren't either, Rebecca. But I can say that today, I see that reflected in the classroom where mm-hmm. you have the kinesthetic activities of doing sound offs with children in the classical setting, and they are doing things, mm-hmm. not just listening. But we also do a lot with the verbal component of sound offs once again, but kids that are, you know, hearing things. Mm-hmm. And then the visual. And having
and
those
the actions.
And the actions, exactly. Mm-hmm. Having all of that come together, set to music mm-hmm. in particular. I mean, I can just see the beauty of that for so many kids.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I would agree that most likely that was the case, mm-hmm. Rebecca. That's mm-hmm. a really good question.
Yeah. Well, and I think about the process-oriented learning that's taking place in most classrooms today. Mm-hmm. It's very loud and mm-hmm. lots of stimuli going on, and I would think it would be mm-hmm. tough for these kids. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's episode of Education Nation. Thank you again for tuning in, and we thank Shirley Marsh for all of her contributions over the last month in our discussion.
Thank you.
We have covered a lot of ground in these 4 weeks. And if you missed any of these broadcasts, please check out Education Nation on iTunes, or you can also go to our Facebook page under Education Nation. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week.